are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, window dressing in Singapore, but that's better than a war. Meanwhile, Supreme Court of the United States okays voter suppression because elections matter. Ivanka made $82 million last year. Just slightly more than the combined revenue of all the programs done out of this studio. Meanwhile, the DOJ argues that emoluments has no meaning. Republican administration now no longer considers gang violence and domestic abuse victims for asylum will affect maybe tens of thousands. Larry Kudlow reportedly has a heart attack. He is the chief economic advisor for the country. Not just Wells Fargo. The OCC finds more bank sales abuse, but guess what? They're not going to tell you. It's primary day in South Carolina, Virginia, Nevada, Maine, North Dakota. Maine is interesting. It's going to give us a chance to see what happens with ranked choice voting. At 4 p.m. today, there will be a major ruling by a judge as to the AT&T Time Warner merger. The implications for monopolies will be quite large. Antitrust issues. And speaking of monopolies, Amazon forces the city of Seattle to roll back one of its taxes. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I stayed up too late last night in anticipation. You know, there is a definite Lucy football quality to all of this with Donald Trump. And I'm trying to take the most optimistic view of this because why not? There'll be plenty of time to be pessimistic later. But with that said, seriously, folks, I mean, we should stay optimistic, but also remember, this is Donald Trump. And even a monkey would walk into a situation and get something right. Just like, you know, the sheer coincidence would have good things happen in certain times. But if that monkey constantly had an agenda in which to enrich themselves and really saw everything that happens as secondary to how it impacts that person.
Bananas, exactly. Endless banana opportunity. Oh my God. More bananas.
Understand more bananas. That the tree law space. Of averages would be nullified because it's not the law of averages that we're dealing with here. We're dealing with an individual who is expressly constantly looking out for his own interests that supersede all other interests. So just keep that in mind as we go through this stuff, because that is, I think, an important thing to have in the back of your head if you really want to have some tether to reality.
Oh, certainly. But if that gets us a peace deal with North Korea, right. Don't you think that's good?
No, but you're missing my point. I'm suggesting that the likelihood of a peace deal with North Korea is diminished by what I have just said. It does not, because in the end, a peace deal with North Korea does not necessarily behoove Donald Trump. And so that's all I'm saying. Do I think this is going to resolve, you know, separate to that question, do I think it's going to end up in a peace deal with North Korea? No. But
what if he wants to put some hotels there?
He may get a deal to do some hotels there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he needs peace. that's what I'm saying.
Just because you're at war doesn't mean you don't need hotels.
Here's the operating principle that people should remember. The phone call transcript with the president of Mexico, whose name escapes me for the moment, when he said, look, I don't need you to pay for the wall. I need you to say you're going to pay for the wall. Because that's really important to people, because I've made that promise.
You should see the rubes.
And Donald Trump's not going to be here in either 2 or 8 years. You know, one way or another, he's going to not be the president. Kim Jong-un is going to be the leader of that country.
No, I'm going to be termed out in a couple years. Psych, idiot. So, I don't run my country like that.
But, so, and I'm going to do the optimistic take. I don't care if we were to get peace in North Korea, I don't care about Donald Trump at all. That's fine. Great. I'm glad that his all of the deep-seated psychological dysfunctions that he has brought about something good. But what I'm suggesting is that you still need to be tethered with reality as you start to analyze this, and know that the two primary players in this little drama have very, very narrow interests. And we know who they are. And we know what those interests are. So you keep that in mind.
Like Trump's like, oh my God, James, Mattis, guess what Kim told me? He got to kill his uncle with a flamethrower. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life. Why can't we do cool things like that?
Exactly.
Why can't we cool... But I actually have two quick...
All right, before we get into it, let me do this.
Okay.
We're going to get into it in a second. But the one thing that is instructive about this summit is the need for translators. In other words, the need...
That's quite a translation job.
Well, yes.
Could you imagine?
Yes.
You're sitting in between those two.
You gotta imagine the translator just going like, I don't know. I know it doesn't make sense. There's no syntax to this. Learning a new language is a journey, folks. It can be challenging, but it is one that is one of the most rewarding experiences a person can have. My biggest regret is that I don't speak Spanish really in any way at all. But the best way to reach your goal, whether that's a basic understanding or full-on fluency, is to immerse yourself in that language. Finally, there's a way to do that online from the comfort of your own home, thanks to LiveLingua. LiveLingua offers immersive online language lessons via Skype. Their instructors, all native speakers. They teach. They go one-on-one with you over Skype. You get the level you need to reach, whether it's basic phrases and questions or if you want a comprehensive understanding of the language. They don't offer trendy new gimmicks. No, you know, 5 minutes a day. It's not going to make you fluent in a month. But if you're looking to learn one of the most 11 most commonly spoken languages, you need a proven approach to become fluent and confident. And LiveLingua follows the immersive language learning method that diplomats and educators have used for hundreds of years. They do it online, but doing it online gives students the opportunity to build a routine and a comfort zone that works for them. On Skype, students work one-on-one with their teacher, meaning there's no intimidation, no worry about falling behind. You don't have to worry about the people behind the class who, oh, they got a very fancy accent, that type of stuff. Their immersive method. Well, you know, there was always somebody in class who was just like, who would have an affectation, and you think that they know the language.
Yeah.
Their immersive method at LiveLingua increases memorization and finally helps a new language be part of your life. Here's the deal. Listeners of the Majority Report can check out LiveLingua's platform by signing up for a free trial lesson. You get to take one free. You can do it at livelingua.com/majority. That's livelingua.com/majority. You get Live Lingua's immersive language learning method. It's convenient, productive, built to meet the needs of each student, and you can test it out with a free lesson. livelingua.com/majority. Sign up for your free lesson now.
I'm gonna try that.
I was thinking of a new character.
I am going to do that this evening.
Me falta practicar.
I was thinking of a new character.
I need to practice.
See,
do you know any? Wait, I thought you did French.
Je parle un petit peu de français. I like know enough that if nobody else knows the language,
you sound
it can
like
make
you know
it sound
it.
Like I know, but I'm
that's
not going
to
exactly
go. What
I'm not
going to
go too
right
deep,
there.
Right? Exactly.
I was thinking of a new character, like the Donald Trump of podcast deals, and he's just like, "I just used listener code. Never going to use it again. Another win." like Donald Trump of the petty,
right?
Like, I just totally beat Harry's again. I did a listener code for a totally different show. Got the deal the second time.
Exactly.
Another win.
Another win. I have gotten 3 introduction sets. All right. Let's start with this. There were 4 points to this declaration. You will see that it is. And I want to start with this. When I headline this, right, window dressing in Singapore, but that's better than a war. Understand that the vast majority, the overwhelming sense that there might be a war came from Donald Trump in the first place, right? I negotiated against myself. So it's one of those situations where it's like, I don't get any credit for saving your life. I decided not to kill you today. You know, it's one of those jobs.
The great thing about Mad Men theory is you get a win when you just decide to start acting normally.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I'm not totally, utterly mentally ill. Put it in the W column.
Exactly. And so we're avoiding war, but basically all we're doing is like, oh, and look, I don't know that we're avoiding war. I just know that we didn't have a war this week. Here's the 4-point declaration, and see if you can figure out what the weasel words are in this. United States and the DPRK commit to establish new U.S. DPRK relations in accordance with the desire of the peoples of the two countries for peace and prosperity. That's nice. They've committed to basically the pursuit of something good. The United States and the DPRK will join their efforts to build a lasting and stable peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. That's basically a restatement of the first thing. They will join their efforts. Number 3, reaffirming the April 27th, 2018 Panmunjom Declaration, the DPRK commits to work towards the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Did anybody catch that?
Sounds like yet again.
Well, here's the point. What does towards mean?
Yeah, right. It's aspirational.
Sometimes you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet,
I
right?
Think everybody
so
should
we may have to test just to, and because in fact
we should have everyone should have access to denuclearization.
The primary reason why this summit took place, the primary reason, at least, you know, without the benefit of 2020 hindsight, because if there's a war in 6 months, then we know the primary reason was because it was Bolton's. When Bolton said, I want a summit soon, that way we can get the negotiations out of the way. So, but as of today, the primary reason for this summit, the most rational assessment of that is because they had some, and by they, I mean the DPRK, had some successful tests of nuclear weapons and missiles. And so now they've got the leverage. And so that's why we're here. So the idea of committing to work towards the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula could mean anything and could mean as incremental as one can, you know, beyond incremental. There's, okay, and the United States and the DPRK commit to recovering POW MIA remains, including the immediate repatriation of those already identified. I guess that's a good thing. The words verification are not here in this document. The reason why the words verification are not here in this document is because there are no milestones. There are no mechanisms in which to measure any progress. This is not really a deal to do anything. It is exactly.
Sorry, guys.
It's a declaration that, like, let's try.
You see, imagine the North Koreans just like to the Iranians, like, you guys are idiots. Just like threaten to bomb all of them, and then you build a nuke, and then you just are like, dude, you're a peacemaker though. Like, your hotels are awesome. Then you meet with them, then you win. You guys are idiots.
Honestly,
stupid.
This 4-point declaration has as much substance as that Coke commercial where everybody gives him a flower or something, right? I mean,
that's true, but that is also better than war.
But
my only thought out of it, just as a brief tangent, is I wonder, because some Democratic responses have been really
a little jingoistic.
I don't even care about jingoistic per se. I just care, like, awesomely foolish to hawkishly try to undermine them meeting together. And what I wonder is, the best case scenario is that this just creates a new context for, you know, the next Democratic president to come into office and be like, the negotiations continue.
I mean,
the new normal version is that we meet with them. That's a good thing.
There's three possible places that we can go from this. But let me just counter what you're saying there specifically, because if you look at, like, the 2005 agreement with North Korea, and if you go back and look at the agreement that was signed by Clinton.
Yeah, the Clinton.
But there was one in 2005, too, that laid out some basic terms. And the fact is that those did not necessarily have they did not land where they wanted them to. There is an argument. I don't think it's particularly strong, but there is an argument that the idea of the president of the United States meeting unilaterally with you has some value to you, particularly if you are a marginal figure in the world stage.
Has a lot of value.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And that giving that up and getting nothing in return is, you basically, you know, wasted some of your firepower. You don't have a lot of leverage necessarily. And so, you know, yes, there is a hope that something different will happen in the future than has had it happened in the past. Fine. But let's not get too carried away on the implications of that.
Well,
I think the criticism is not irrational. I think the idea of, like, the DPRK and the American flags together, you know, there's another element to this. America's not what it was 2 years ago, even. Like, we just blew up the G7.
I think it's irrational
and I would say
instigate Trump in a direction that is to say, basically, like, you're being weak is never the thing to tell him.
I guess, he's not going to do anything anyways, no matter what.
Well,
wait a second. Six months ago, everybody's freaked out that he was going to do something really terrible.
Oh, yeah, I agree. So, yeah, but I'm saying I don't think that he's responding to what, like, Chuck Schumer says. And when you look on balance, the implications of what happened at the G7 and what happened with Canada could very well have far greater implications than what happened in Singapore. I mean, that would not be an irrational assessment at all.
Well, Canada is not sitting on a nuclear arsenal that it's threatening to use.
Well,
sitting on a he could get with Ivanka.
But I got news for you. The North Koreans have not done anything different than they had done 3 weeks ago or 2 months ago or whatnot. I mean, the intentions that they have are no different. There's no reason to believe that there's even an iota of difference in their intentions. There's no evidence of it. They listen, the North Korea leadership has wanted to meet with all these people forever.
Yeah, that's the point. Well, the whole strategy for this kid is to normalize, to normalize North Korea.
Well, is that,
and they're definitely achieving that.
Is that such a bad thing? Like, if Kim Jong-un is acting largely out of a desire to be seen as legitimate in the eyes of the world, and he gets his wish in this instance, and is maybe less likely to
violent
as a result, that is a good thing.
And maybe less like, well, first of all, I don't think he's going to be any less violent domestically.
Yeah, people should like, not
he's not going to not
their domestic reality.
I don't think there's no reason to believe this guy is going to stop killing his family members or dissidents.
That's
or
so cool.
Like, I'm not saying that this is a good government or a good ruler, but that doesn't mean that we should be hoping to get into a war with them or do some sort of nuclear brinksmanship.
I am not familiar with anybody in this room who has said that or who has expressed that or implied
that. Membership in the committee?
Except for that. But that's like
I'm just saying, if they have a meeting and nothing is accomplished except for they both feel better, that's a good thing for two unstable dictators.
Unless it further entrenches him and teaches him the lesson, this 35-year-old, that I can continue to wear down and still maintain the same threat posture I've had, still maintain the dictatorship I've had. I mean,
well,
all I'm saying is that I think on balance, like, I don't think there's anything bad with this, but there is a very rational argument that we have lost a certain amount of leverage and have not in any material way diminished the threat.
That leverage didn't particularly work before. I mean, as evidence. And the second thing to say, too, is that it's also like, I think another part that people miss when they get so specifically freaked out about that, you know, U.S. versus, you know, Korea relationship is like, a major reason this happened is because of China still putting pressure and actually sealing up there is some actual work on, like, their security issues around their border with North Korea, and they've put a lot of pressure on him. Singapore, who does have diplomatic relations with them, pocketed the cost for the meeting, and there's, like, a peace movement in South Korea with a president who's, like, more popular than any of these people. Like, so I just think that, like, There's a broader pressure towards it happening, and sometimes these things do.
Well, look, here's the three things that could come out of this. One, that we get a real process. That this
is a kabuki process, though, I think, is what we're arguing. Like, this is a process. It could be ridiculous in many ways, but it is literally a process.
Okay, that we get a real process, one that will actually produce meaningful outcomes. Like, this is a process, but it also could just be a process of Donald Trump being able to say, like, I did something. You know, like, the implication, like, there's no substance to this. It is a process. I mean, arguably, our talking about it is part of the process, too. And arguably, our talking about it will have as much implications as, you know, these press conferences.
First bilateral meeting between those two leaders is a huge deal in and of itself.
But it's not as if we couldn't have had this bilateral meeting at any time.
What does that have to do with how big it is?
Well, because if it was always available for the U.S. president, it's not such an amazing feat.
Okay. It's a major shift in how we've done things with them. I mean,
it is a major shift in how we've done things, and there's absolutely no evidence at this point that it's going to mean anything.
I mean, I don't think Trump deserves credit or props in any way, but if the outcome of this meeting is that we are less likely to get into a war with North Korea, that's good.
Yes, I agree. That is the operative word is the if. If the outcome of this meeting is that John Bolton gets what he wanted, which he literally stated, do a summit early so that we can show that negotiations are meaningless following that and we can get into a war, then it's a bad thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So if good things happen after this, this is a good thing. If bad things happens after this, it's a bad thing. I mean, yes. And all I'm suggesting is that there's not a lot that's come out of this that gives us a sense that good things or bad things are going to happen. One of the following three scenarios seem to me to be equally possible. One is that a genuine process with timetables, with benchmarks, comes out of this, follows it, where there's actual benchmarks and timetables and verification processes and whatnot. The other one is that they just have this meeting and Trump does not find it in his interest to be belligerent anymore like he was 6 months ago. And figures I don't have to test anymore because from a political standpoint, people think I have these weapons and they work. If I haven't gotten everything technically down on it, it doesn't matter because they function as the kind of weapon I want them to function as, which is that it gets me things. It protects my regime. It gets me a little bit more resources, whatever it is. And the third version is that this is part of, you know, what John Bolton wanted. They have the summit. Nothing comes out of it. And then we can go ahead with the war. Right now, there's
anything he wants. I think it would be about moving troops potentially out of there to do something in the Middle East. I think that's a real, like, that's quite a bank shot.
Trump announced that we're going to stop the war games that we have with South Korea. And let me tell you what the response was to that. Not from North Korea, but from the U.S. forces in Korea. It said, I'll tell you right now what the response was from.
I
can't find it.
Vamp, is his board up? That's the most important question. Is the board up?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got it.
You got it?
Yeah. Here's a quote from the U.S. forces in Korea.
What are you talking about?
Right. U.S. forces in Korea said Tuesday it had received no instructions to stop upcoming military drills. This is according to a report from Stars and Stripes. In coordination with our South Korean partners, we will continue our current military posture until we receive updated guidance from the Defense Department and or Indo-Pacific Command. This was according to Colonel Jennifer Lovett. The South Korean president's office said Tuesday it was still trying to figure out what Trump meant. At this moment, we need to figure out President Trump's accurate meaning and intention, a South Korean statement said.
We need to figure out what the hell is going on.
Right now, the U.S. and South Korea are not engaged, and we're the only ones who make up our minds on this, Mattis said. So, this is a bit of a microcosm, I think, of what we could be watching here. Donald Trump comes out and says, we're going to end all military, we're going to send them all home. Just like he did with the transgender ban, right? And nobody got any orders, and it just sort of like 3 months later, people are just like, what happened with that? They're doing military exercises. And then Un freaks out. Says, Donald Trump promised me. And Trump said, well, we'd stopped. We canceled those.
The other
and then,
exercise.
I mean, it's easy to imagine multiple scenarios that come out of this. And there's no evidence. I don't think people should be saying that he shouldn't have done this. I you know, and like I say, I don't think the costs are that high. I don't think it's an irrational argument to make that the costs that we've expended something and got nothing back. But in the main, I think, like, you know, let 1,000 flowers bloom. But you plant these, you don't know that.
I do. It was just interesting. I like that you're quoting Mao in this conversation.
Well, sure. But if you spread those seeds on a parking lot, you know, don't hold your breath that there's going to be anything that's going to grow.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Right.
I love the Mao quote, which was a fake invitation for political debate, getting mixed with a don't plant your seeds in non-fertile soil.
I both quoted Mao.
Handyman Magazine and Mao.
Yes, Steve McKenzie, who is a gardening expert.
We should quote Mao.
That's where we are. Now, there's a lot of folks who are not terribly happy about this. And
I'm roaring mad.
This was worth it as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, exactly. All those times. Do you remember? Let's just for a moment, and I wish we could have the ability to do graphics like on the fly where I could do like a little timeline of Lindsey Graham, starting with Donald Trump announcing Lindsey Graham's cell phone number during the campaign.
Oh, that
right?
was the coolest
right?
thing
like,
ever.
Like, Lindsey Graham, this guy's such a wimp. He called me all the time to get money. And
to get on Fox.
And to get on Fox. Oh, yeah, he wanted to get on TV, so I thought I'd help him. You know, here's his phone number. And then Lindsey Graham having to slough it off by doing a commercial where he destroys his own phone. Then Lindsey Graham literally talking about Ted Cruz and Donald Trump as, you know, one is cyanide and the other is, you know, plutonium in terms of like, you know, two different types of poison. It doesn't matter. And then Lindsey Graham cut to 6 to 8 months later. Lindsey Graham is kissing Donald Trump's ass because he wants to be Secretary of State. And is like publicly bragging about what a great golfer Donald Trump
is. You do so many good things. You're so good at real estate and golf. And I just sure would love to wage war, would kill and bloodlet a bunch of goddamn Arabs with you. By the way, your daughter, she almost turned me straight.
6 months ago, Lindsey Graham is talking like, you know, a war on the Korean Peninsula would be bad, but it really wouldn't impact us. I mean, it would just be that they would all die.
Man, I pick us every time.
So here he is today getting a little bit concerned about this meeting.
If it's not that clear, it will never work.
But where's the beef? Because so far we didn't hear anything about a timetable, and we all know the North Koreans like to run out the clock and stall and pretend they're going to denuclearize and then blow it off. So, I mean, you're a hardliner on North Korea. Don't you want to see the details?
Oh, absolutely. Not only do I want to see the details, I want to vote on them. So here's what I would tell President Trump. I stand with you. The Schumer letter detailing what a good deal would look like, I embrace. But anything you negotiate with North Korea will have to come to the Congress for our approval. And we're looking at details matter, but I'm hopeful. I think he has convinced Kim Jong-un that he's better off giving up his nuclear weapons than he is keeping them, and that's the goal. And if he has failed to do that, then we're going to have a military conflict, and that would be a very bad ending to this new chapter.
And then let me ask you about these so-called war games. That's what the president talks about, and these joint military exercises between South Korea and the United States. The president's called them provocative. That's certainly the North Koreans' view of them, and he said today, okay, well, we're not going to do them anymore. So that's a major concession by the U.S. Did the U.S. give more than it got today?
I don't think canceling a war game is going to matter over the arc of time. The one thing that I would violently disagree with is removing our troops. I can't imagine I would vote for any agreement that requires us to withdraw our forces, because that would destabilize Asia. That's what China wants. That doesn't make the world more peaceful. It makes it more dangerous. The goal is for them to give up their weapons program, missiles, and bombs in return for security and prosperity. Senator Schumer, a Democrat, has laid out a deal I could accept. The only way you're going to get that deal is to convince North Korea that if they do not take the peace route, we will use military force as a last option. We're going to end this program one way or the other. It's not if, it's how, and it's when. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm very pleased with President Trump thus far, but we've got a long ways to go. They've done this twice, and we can't let them do it a third time.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing, is that this type of statement is just as scary as anything else. I mean, look, Lindsey Graham, I think, has, on balance, a desire for a conflict.
And this is partially I was objecting to the Schumer letter earlier, right? It's also empowering a guy like Graham. I mean, I just don't like it.
I mean, if we have fewer U.S. troops around the world in other countries, isn't that a good thing?
Depending.
Yes.
Depending.
I think broadly speaking, definitely.
How Lindsey Graham feels emotionally about it.
I think definitely, broadly speaking. But look, we just don't know how sincere this effort by Donald Trump is. And we do know that his chief national security advisor said, let's have a summit so we don't have to spend all this time negotiating, because at the end of the day, they know that Un is not going to give up his weapons. He's not going to do it.
And they can say we tried.
So that's also we can all, say and we can try it. And Lindsey Graham can go on and say, I totally appreciate this effort. I'm totally on board. And as long as XYZ impossibilities, incidentally, right? As long as these three impossible things happen and we don't have to do ABC, which are obviously necessary, like, how do you have a peace agreement and still have 30,000 U.S. troops there? You know, that's the thing, is that, like, this raising of expectations and of saying that this stuff, you know, assuming that suddenly Donald Trump has good intentions on this. Everything else, not so much. But he really genuinely has always been preparing for his entire life for peace with North Korea. I think there's a lot of evidence that one should be very highly skeptical of that. And because, like, unmet expectations are generally the most, I think, problematic phenomena that exist in human relations.
Has he given us a reason to believe he's insincere on this?
I'm sorry, has Donald Trump, like, given us a reason to believe he's insincere on this?
Like, it's,
yes.
It seems like the people in his administration.
I will tell you what reasons he's given. Every single day when he lies through his teeth is a reason to believe he's insincere,
like,
about the next,
like,
lie.
He wants this to be like his accomplishment in office that he gets lots of credit for.
I don't know how you can decide today that Donald Trump is being sincere. Is there another example you can give aside from, yes, I would say some of his rhetoric regarding some of his racist rhetoric. But is there any other example you can give me of Donald Trump being sincere?
Well, like, he could be doing a bad job at this, but, like, why would he be doing it if he didn't think it was going to work? I don't know.
Well, I think it makes him feel like he's a world stage player. Maybe there's other value to him. I can come up with a million different reasons why this would be valuable to him without it actually leading to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
I mean,
that's not happening.
The likelihood that this is actually going to accomplish that is quite low.
Right.
But
that's not happening. That's denuclearization. Forget that.
But like,
that's not happening. The question is, do you get things on a bit of a better track and soothe the situation a bit? And I actually think this does do that.
Well, the soothing of the situation was a function of him, anyways.
Right. Yeah, totally.
So if we're
and as far as like war goes, there's no doubt that the one they're angling for is with Iran.
I would agree
that's
with that too. Here is Donald Trump. Really appreciating one of the questions that Kim Jong-un answers. And he gives the classic, this is number one. He gives Un the classic Donald Trump. Incidentally, the shape of the presidential library, of Donald Trump presidential library, is going to be. It's going to be in a thumbs up.
We will have a terrific relationship, I have no doubt.
Pause it. Can I just say that, like, just if you want more evidence as to why Donald Trump might not be sincere, is he said that same thing with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. I think, like, literally those same words, sitting in a similar position. And Trudeau and Macron. And
definitely Macron. Macron used to be my favorite.
And I think
now it's Kim.
I don't know if he was sitting in that position or he was at a table when he said, like, I want this to be about love. I want to love the children, the DACA children. I want to love them. I mean, honestly, I think, like, there's a lot of evidence that Donald Trump may be insincere every time he opens his mouth. Continue.
Well, it was not easy to get here.
우리한테는 우리 발목을 잡는 그 과거가 있고 또 그릇된 국민과 발행들이 우리 때로는 우리 눈과 귀를 가리고 있었는데 우리 모든 것을 이겨내고 이 자리까지 왔습니다.
The past worked as fetters on our wings, and the old prejudices and practices worked as obstacles on our way forward, but we overcame all of them, and we are here today.
That's true.
What do you think?
Thank you very
Thumbs
much.
Up. Thumbs up. And all these prejudices, look at all the things we've overcome, says Un, to get here where we are today, where I am on the same stage as the President of the United States, and I have given up exactly nothing.
You guys are such idiots.
Honestly.
You had like a back channel through Switzerland. You were like dismantling your centrifuges to get like a meeting with Obama. I just was like, I think you're like a great leader and such. And then he was just like, yeah, really? And now we're in Singapore, and we committed to nothing. You guys are so stupid.
Well, I mean, that's also arguably,
hey, Iran.
That's honestly, that's also arguably a bad precedent to set.
Well, there is, but there's also structural, like people, like, I mean, you can't, like, the lobbying pressure from the Emirates, from Saudi, from Israel to kill the Iran deal is like a structural reality in Washington. There actually isn't the same kind of like structure. I mean, I think there's structure in terms of like just arms deals for the future out of the Pentagon as like China rises just as like a military slush fund, but not the same type of fanatical ideological.
Yes, absolutely. But in terms of like the same
terrible
way that
in terms
Libya,
of our global posture, of
and
course.
In terms of, in the same way that like the whole Libya fiasco was a bad lesson to teach Un, it's quite conceivable that this episode with Un is a bad lesson to teach whomever in the future. I mean, look, Donald Trump is the president of the United States. There seems to me to be at least like three or four, five countries that could be, you know, I don't know. Pakistan has a lot more structure to it, but I mean,
Pakistan's already all set in that regard.
I mean, well, they're all set in terms of nukes, but I mean, in terms of like leadership, who knows
Pakistan
where things are going?
Is 100% all in with China.
I'm just saying there is, in the future, there could be leaders to whom this is not necessarily
sending the best signal. But who knows?
What if it works?
But he likes the kid.
I don't think it's going to work to like denuclearize the peninsula and solve this very complex situation. But wouldn't it be kind of funny?
If, like, it would be great.
This yeah, idiot,
be
cool.
It would be
child
great.
King.
Be awesome.
Of course,
I'll be the first person to give him a rock.
Of course.
Oh my god, the liberals would be so mad.
I'll be the. Oh my god.
Well, Jesus. I think there's probably got to be. A
I like how
for
things
it.
Are getting real myopic here. Right. You're just like when the Korean Peninsula is denuclearized and the oldest long like the longest standing conflict in the world is solved. I can't wait to see what Clara Jeffrey tweeted. She's gonna have a meltdown. Oh my god.
I'm just saying. Not the
god.
Most important
social media
thing
has
it.
Totally destroyed.
It
politics. Our brains
be,
are rotten.
It would be kind of funny. Come on.
It's not
that
even in the
really,
top 10 of
yeah,
most important things.
I'm going to have
it.
To go with like not but, even top 30. It would be
it's,
sort of
it's
funny,
not even the top
10. I dare you, Mr. Trump. President Obama would have had the integrity to nuke Kim Jong-un personally.
Right, exactly.
Come on.
All right. Here's Donald Trump, who is a great judge of character.
Totally.
Saying that he totally trusts Kim Jong-un. Why wouldn't he?
He'll do it. I really believe that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. I really believe. And it was really the engine testing site, in addition to all of the other things that they've agreed to do. It was the they have a very powerful engine testing site that, again, we're able to see because of the heat that they that it emits. And yeah. I'm able to, I'm very happy. I'll tell you what, I'm very happy with those 2 points, the 2 points you mentioned, but I think you might be referring to the thing that's not in, which is the engine testing site. I think he's going to do these things. I may be wrong. I mean, I may stand before you in 6 months and say, hey, I was wrong. I don't know
would
that I'll have. Ever admit that, but I'll find a, I'll find some kind of an excuse. Okay, one or two, one more. Come on.
Oh, my God.
That is Trump at his finest right
yes.
there.
And just in case they didn't know how we were measuring the engine testing thing, it was, it's the, once you get past a certain temperature, I'm not going to say what it is, but it's actually 103.
Those are like the isotopes and stuff, but look, I trust the Supreme Leader. I think in many ways we liked each other in a certain sense.
Between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. North Korea time, we got a satellite in orbit above it.
So, no, we talked about that, but also the testing, but also the isotopes.
Super,
and such.
Super lucky that they don't use the type of technology that is written about in this document here that I found. Because if they use that, we wouldn't be able to tell.
Yeah, but their program's super transparent because they're very committed to fairness.
Totally.
They wanted you always to be able to see what they were doing.
We'll play a little bit more from this, but before we go into the fun half, I want to talk just briefly about the Supreme Court decision yesterday. I think we touched on it briefly, but the case was brought to the Supreme Court, Husted v. Philip Randolph Institute. And I'm not sure who the Philip Randolph Institute sounds to me like some type of right-wing think tank that brings lawsuits to court in an attempt to suppress votes. And so Husted was a case that was trying to determine whether or not Ohio's policy of removing voters from the voter rolls was consistent with the National Voter Registration Act. And so this is a statutory question. This is not a constitutional question. There is no, there's I guess nibbles around the edge, but broadly speaking, there is no federal right to vote. The process for which Ohio would remove people from the voter rolls was a 6-year long process. If you do not vote in the course of two consecutive years. So you don't vote either in the national, the general election or the midterms or primaries over the course of those 2 years. Ohio sends a notice to you, mails one in the mail. It says, hey, you've either got to vote or, you know, just touch base with us. If that registered voter does not vote for an additional period of four consecutive years, then that includes two federal general elections, then they are removed from the rolls. The central question in this case was whether the National Voter Registration Act prevented this type of notify, wait, and purge process. According to the NVRA, registrants who have not responded to a notice and who have not voted in two consecutive general elections for federal office shall be removed from the official list of eligible voters, except that no registrant may be removed solely by reason of a failure to vote. Okay? Now, Alito, when he wrote the opinion deciding this case, says that Ohio does not rely solely on a failure to vote to remove them from this, from the rolls. Breyer, on the other hand, in writing the dissent, points out that, in fact, the process does not start, or I should say this process starts because of a failure to vote. They don't, it's not a question of sending letters. It's because you did not vote that the process starts. Ohio doesn't send letters willy-nilly. It is because you haven't voted that the process starts. If it's a system, as Breyer said, that is rooted in one's presumed change of address, kicks into gear only when someone doesn't vote, it's the voting that matters, not the change of address. Okay? Because they want to check to make sure that you're registered in the right place. It is also noted that there was a study, I think it was by Reuters, that showed that the vast majority of people who get thrown off the voting rolls in these situations are Democratic-leaning voters. They are, in 2016, Reuters found that at least 144,000 people were removed from the rolls in the state's three biggest counties, Cuyahoga, Hamilton, and Franklin, which include Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus, respectively. Those removals happening disproportionately Democratic leaning, predominantly black neighborhoods. Not to mention the fact that people don't read their mail like they used to. The implications of everybody in this office just raised their hand, essentially. People don't read their mail like they used to. This is just out and out voter suppression. It is out and out voter suppression, and it has been okayed by the Supreme Court of the United States. And that has happened because Donald Trump had the ability to name a member to the Supreme Court. And that is because Donald Trump won that election. In part because the Republicans refused to seat somebody. But if it was 4-4, this case would go back down to the appellate court or would have never made it to the Supreme Court. The appellate court would have stood. This voter purge law would be illegal. Now you are going to see every Republican state in the country adopt this. Every single one that is controlled by Republicans will adopt this. Every single one. You will make it harder and harder for people to vote. Now, it's statutory, so if Democrats get reelected and they're smart enough to enact reforms that are not only healthy for our democracy, but also, coincidentally, will probably help them win elections, then this thing can be fixed. And then maybe, you know, 5 or 6 years. But of course, it's going to be a lot harder for Democrats to get elected to office because their voters keep getting purged from the voting rolls.
What we need is peace. I'm trying to do my Jill Stein impression. There you go. I forgot how to do that. Like, and the answer to voter purges is deals that are green.
I'm not going to hold my breath
Clinton
for them to do it.
Hillary suppressed every vote. All the votes. She suppressed them. We know how she suppresses votes.
Nevertheless, none of that would have been necessary had Hillary Clinton been elected president.
Well, maybe if you didn't vote out of fear, we'd have an even better scenario. Jill Stein.
To Donald Trump.
Yeah. Jill Stein, the Green New Deal.
All right.
You know what I call you? A Democratic Party submissive. Because you bend out and take it every...
Jesus. Something wrong
every
with you.
Single time. No, that's a real headline somebody showed me.
That about me?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's a YouTube what? Video.
Oh, like on Reddit?
It's a YouTube video. So it's called Sam Cedar, Democrat. Party submissive. And I don't want to give those channels too much energy because they're like so stupid, but that's such a clutch headline.
Actually, to be honest, that's on my profile on
Democrat. I hate all of the Pod Save America people, but I'm also a submissive
right.
for the Democratic
Democratic
Party. You see,
submissive
everybody.
Friendly. You know, that's the thing is that
I am a friend to all to, and no one
to Democratic kink shame me. And these people call
that's
themselves
exactly what they're
genuine
doing,
progressives.
That's exactly what they're doing.
I don't
it's really
think
not
so.
Cool.
I love when they portray their promises to the progressive base. Lie to me more. Lie. Break your promises. Did you know how Hillary said she's going to reform trade? But then there was a secret meeting at Goldman Sachs where she said she's going to have even worse trade deals. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to vote.
I'm hoping Tom Perez will take another job. He'll have 3 jobs on the
Tom
side
Perez
in addition
have all
to being
the
head of the DNC.
I remember when Keith Ellison announced, I was so excited because I wanted to see how Obama would destroy him.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Folks, just a reminder, this show relies on your membership to maintain its submissiveness to the Democratic Party. Without your help, I cannot. This is how submissive I am to the Democratic Party. They are like, we will pay you to toe our Democratic Party line.
And no,
no,
I don't want your
I
money.
Will
I
raise
want
my
more.
Own money.
I want to be demeaned more.
I'm going to raise my own money, and I'm going to pay you the right to carry your water. Every bucket I carry, I'm going to give you $5. Folks, it is your
only
support.
Only dominant relationships I like is when I'm smearing progressives, and that's it.
Folks, you can help fund me on my mission to root out true progressives on YouTube. Oh, God.
Oh, these guys. So great.
JoinTheMajorityReport.com. JoinTheMajorityReport.com. And if you do not have the finances to become a member, and yet you are very interested in listening to the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will get back to you eventually. Tonight is Tuesday. It is TMBS night. and
Mike Hanna, UN correspondent, Al Jazeera. We're talking.
Is he going to be in studio?
No, unfortunately, he's going to be in studio soon. He's at. He's actually covering the Gaza resolution at the UN, so he can't be.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, excuse you. So Mike Hanna, and then Cody Johnson, who he used to be a host on Cracked.
Oh yeah,
And he had his, and he's got done some great work on Elon Musk recently. So we're going to be triggering more Musk cultists, and a lot of other stuff. 7 o'clock, check it out.
You can also subscribe to that on iTunes, folks, which is that way you don't have to necessarily see it live. Well, you can do both. Jamie, new episode of the Antifada.
It's newish. We take questions from our awesome, awesome listeners, and it produced a pretty good episode, I think. We're doing a new one this weekend, TBD.
Patreon.com/TheAntifada. And, of course, don't forget Matt's newest podcast, Literary Hangover, where you can actually sound like you read the
like
books that Matt reads.
English degree without the student loan debt. Did 1984 last weekend for Patreon members, and Rip Van Winkle coming up for everybody.
There you go. All right, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. Be right back.